When Giles saw the first tendrils of fog appear out of nowhere, he thought it was some kind of trick. A hidden smoke bomb like he'd seen in a couple of traveling carny shows. A bomb with some kind of voice-activated trigger. But this stuff didn't act like any smoke he'd ever seen. It didn't rise straight up in the air as it should have. Instead, it spread out sideways, then flowed down, billowing over the road like a mattress of liquid cotton.
Palmer, the Guardian, offers up a sacrifice to you!
Toss the body over.
The two young clansmen picked up Billy's body by wrists and feet.
Oh, you fucking bastards.
By this time, the fog had spread until it filled the roadway from shoulder to shoulder in a layer about 3 feet thick. Then, out of the central mass, a single, cautious feeler appeared. Like a python made of mist, the appendage extended itself, growing in length as it crept inch by inch over the road's surface toward the still body. Giles took an involuntary step backward as the cloud suddenly surged in all directions, blocking out the dead end, the forested slope above it, even the sky. It was close now, and it didn't feel like fog. It wasn't cool and wet inside the nostrils. It burned, like weak acid vapor, and it smelled of ozone. It didn't look like fog either. The interior of the cloud seemed to glow, pulsing with a dull yellowish light. Then, it began to snow. Huge wet flakes materialized out of the front of the fog bank. Over Giles' shoulder, the sky was piercingly blue, and the sun blazing hot on his back. The snowflakes melted as they lightly brushed his face and drifted onto the road. Much of it made contact with the mist.
There's electricity in that mist.
Smell ozone?
Giles sensed movement behind him, and as he turned, he saw the Guardians had pulled well back. They still blocked the road, and their guns were now raised and aimed. He was sure they were going to open fire. He was wrong. The fog tendril wrapped around Billy's legs, then retracted. As it did so, it moved the corpse, scraping it across the pavement a good 2 feet. Giles watched in astonishment, as in similar increments, his dead comrade was drawn inexorably into the cloud.
Sweet meat!
For his own part, Giles felt like he was about to piss himself.
Is it... did it... eat Billy?
Suddenly, an arm made of mist snaked out and shot towards Hemmerman's unprotected chest.
No!
The big man flew through the air and landed face down on the tarmac. A wave of mist quickly rushed out from under the edge of the main cloud, boiling over the roadway, boiling over Hemmerman where he lay. Giles' vision washed over with blue as the sound rattled his very bones. Something warm and wet spattered his cheek. Automatically, he reached up to wipe it away with his hand. When he looked down, he saw through stars that his fingers were red and slick with blood.
Giles! He's fucking gone! What the hell is wrong with you, triple stoop inbred fuck?
Jonathan disappeared inside the floating mist.
That's enough!
The spirit tells us what it's done!
The hell with that! Between that freak of nature and having a chance to take one of you fucks with me, I know what I'll do! Yeah! Oh, come on, shins! You bastards! Why do you just fucking kill me?
Spirit prefers its meat still breathing.
The clammy mist swirled around Giles, and his world quickly faded to white. He couldn't even see the asphalt right under his nose. He tasted acid in his throat and felt a burn deep in his lungs. He was blind, alone, and suffocating. The sensation of being slowly smothered touched some primal fear in him, and despite his injuries, galvanized him to move. The fog seized him in its powerful grip and began to pull on his wrists, ankles, and head. It stretched his prostrate body in every direction at once, until the shoulder, neck, and hip joints cracked, until the sinews snapped their tethers with bone, and the flesh itself started to rip away.
Now this is interesting.
Trader Shabazz watched the fog retreat in front of the cliff. The cottony mass got smaller and smaller, as if it were slipping down a mouse hole, and then it simply vanished. He lowered his telescope's field of view and carefully scanned the roadway between the line of white rocks and the sheer granite wall. The mist had taken three of his men, apparently swallowing them whole. There wasn't so much as a scrap of hide or hair left behind. He took the telescope from his eye. Except for the loss of the recon rag, which had been a regrettable but necessary sacrifice, Shabazz was pleased with the turn of events. Up his nose, he had the scent of something big. Something bigger than big. Like the many other looters searching Deathlands for pre-dark spoils, Shabazz and his crew made their living by ferreting out and then pillaging the secret stockpiles the long-dead government had laid down in anticipation of a nuclear holocaust. After a century of this kind of scavenging, most of the easy pickings were gone. The stockpiles whose access tunnels had been uncovered by the initial blast effects and by subsequent earthquakes, chem rain, and erosion had already been hit hard. There was nothing left inside the concrete-walled storage areas but a litter of MRE wrappers and the remains of ancient campfires. Though Shabazz had stumbled onto some fine hauls in the past, crates of unfired M16s, bulk 5.56mm ammo and grens, brand new fatigue uniforms, he usually dealt in overpriced, low-quality goods. More often than not, the weapons he sold were black powder firearms, and the military clothing he stocked was secondhand and well-worn. When the going got thin, as it invariably did from time to time in Shabazz's business, he wasn't above liberating the inventories of his fellow traders, or of marauding isolated vills, looting them like they were nothing more than stockpiles. Which, of course, they were, in a manner of speaking, except that the folks living in them rarely agreed to give up what they had without a fight. That didn't bother Shabazz one bit. In Deathlands, humans were commodities too. There was always a good market for slaves, if they were strong or pretty. In the 10 years that Shabazz had been running the roads with his band of chillers, holding his operation together with a mixture of bullshit and brutality, he'd been looking for a way out of the hand-to-mouth existence, for the big score. Again, he wasn't alone in this goal, which was shared by every other scrounger with a pickaxe and an empty belly. In a place like Deathlands, where small, impoverished communities were isolated by hundreds of miles of desolate waste, wild rumors abounded. There were stories about monster bugs that crawled up your butt while you slept and ate you from the inside out. About plagues loose in the land that turned your eyes to goo and made blood spurt out of your ears. And, of course, about incredible wealth, always tantalizingly out of reach. If you believe the latter tales, every mountain range had its own dazzling treasure of pre-dark goods, socked away by the government. From personal experience searching for such troves, Shabazz figured 99% of the talk was pure crap. It was the other 1% that interested him. One of the oft-repeated stories concerned a glorious stockpile of stockpiles. Every Ditchwaterville had its own version of the tale, embellished to fit its location, but the important details were always the same. Whether concealed in miles of limestone caves under a wide plain or carved out of the belly of some tall mountain, this ultimate stockpile was a storage area as vast as a pre-apocalypse megacity. It had everything imaginable. Powered by its own nuke reactor, its computerized control system could use the array of automated machine shops to recreate in mass quantities any manufactured item of the late 20th century. From its similarly controlled cloning laboratories and hydroponic gardens, it could produce enough fresh food, both animal and vegetable, to feed 1 million people a day. According to every version of the story, this biggest of stockpiles had been built by the government for one purpose: to jumpstart the post-Holocaust rebuilding of America. For that reason, it had been named Spear Point. Levi Shabazz thought he'd finally found it. Everything he'd seen so far supported Doc Tanner's story about a ghost city hidden under the mountain, a story the old man had given up only after several days of torture. The unnatural and deadly fog was exactly as Tanner had described it. He'd called it the Hound of Hell or some such crap, and claimed it had claws and teeth. As Tanner had said, the road that had been laboriously blasted through the mountainside led nowhere. Both of these elements fit the key details about Spear Point that Shabazz had collected over the years. The old man had been right about the band of droolies guarding the road, too. The only thing the old fool didn't describe was their defensive capabilities. And now Shabazz had seen that for himself. He was impressed. The Guardians had turned the uphill stretch of roadway into one long, grinding kill zone. Because of the distance involved and the direction of the prevailing winds, Shabazz realized that the extremely nasty manner of killing that he'd had in mind for them wouldn't work. Without major military wags, he knew there was no way he and his crew could penetrate past the vehicle traps or survive the onslaught of heavy caliber machine gun fire. In all of Deathlands, there was only one such land armada, and it belonged to a man he had locked horns with several times over matters of business. Each time, Shabazz had come out a big loser. But this time, he had the weapons to do the job right, and his crew would be backed by reinforcements. This time, he would do all the surprising and all the killing.
Vernal.
Yeah, Shabazz?
Get in the wag. We're gonna do two things. Get rich and kill traitor.